everybody, it's Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and welcome to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience. I am on the phone here with Orbert Davis. He has a ton of stuff coming up, but I wanted to jump on real quickly and talk with Orbert and kind of preview his upcoming performance at the Hyde Park Jazz Festival this coming weekend, which is going to be at the Hyde Park Union Church. And he's doing a special tribute concert to Willie Pickens. And then he also has a bunch of other stuff that we're going to touch on. But Orbert, thanks for taking a few minutes to jump on the phone here and talk about some of these performances you have coming up.
No problem, Mike. My pleasure.
So let's talk specifically about the performance you have coming up Saturday, September 28th, 2:30 to 3:30 at the Union Park, Hyde Park Union Church. And I know that that's somewhere that I think Willie Pickens used to play there an awful lot.
That's right. Yeah.
So why don't we talk a little bit now? You know, the legend passed away a couple of years ago, but you know, you had a very strong relationship with him. So I'd love to first let's talk about what kind of music everybody's going to be listening to on Saturday. And you're calling it Orbert Davis Sextet in the Spirit. So why don't we talk a little bit about the music that people are going to hear?
Well, definitely. Well, the first thing is that Willie was just so special, and we had a very just a close spiritual relationship too, because of the fact that this is actually his home church, Union Church, and he's hired me many times to perform there. He has a collection of Christmas jazz pieces that are just absolutely phenomenal, and it features solo trumpet. So I think I've had the pleasure of doing it two or maybe four times, and you know, so it's and Willie, for me, as I say, spiritually, he and I are both Christians. And I'll never forget, we had a gig with Ed Thigpen, I think, in the Twin Cities. So, you know, this is what I was very new on the scene. And I actually gave Willie a ride, man. I was like, I don't know. He was like royalty to me. And so all the way, you know, I took the opportunity to just ask him a bunch of questions. And one of the things that still stick with me today, I asked him whether, you know, why didn't he move to New York? I mean, Willie's, you know, he's such a heavyweight, and he said it was all about family. You know, he said he wanted to raise his family here. He never really wanted to be touring a lot because he didn't want to miss his kids. And you know, I was in my early 20s, but that stuck with me, and that's exactly how I live my life today. You know, my family is my priority. You know, and I don't miss much at home. You know. And I've been very blessed that I can make a good living staying in Chicago, you know, not having to tour.
That's interesting because, well, first of all, you're in the car with Willie for like 7 hours. So, that's driving to the gig. You know, that's unbelievable. Oh, but do you remember the first time that you met him? Because you must have been young, probably sitting in somewhere. And Willie was always giving back to the younger musicians, even up until he passed away. So do you remember that first time or one of the first times you used to sit in with him?
Well, it was actually these series of gigs. I befriended Donald Mead, who was very close to Ed Thigpen, and they called me, man. I was fresh out of college, you know, we did a couple performances in Joliet, but I think that was the first time I met Willie then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that thunderous left hand of his and that, you know, lightning speed right hand just blew me away.
Yeah.
Just absolutely blew me away. And still, just for a long time. But he's been just we've got a chance to work on many, many projects through the years. And so this concert is a tribute to him. And so we're playing a couple arrangements of his. He's got a great album called Jazz Spirit, and it's basically taking old hymns and modernizing them in the jazz. So one I'm focusing on is called Forgive Us Our Sins as We Forgive Others. And he put it into a kind of a McCoy Tyner, John Coltrane thing. So we're going to open that up with the sextet and have some fun. And I have a couple things in my repertoire that are spiritually based as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just looking over who's playing with you. I mean, you have Rajiv Haleem, John Mulder, Stuart Miller, Ernie Adams, Reggie Thomas. And I know that a majority of those guys, I don't know about Reggie, if he played with Willie, because he, obviously a piano player and a piano player, but I know the other guys definitely played with Willie too. So they all have a past.
Definitely. No, most definitely. And this is actually going to be my first time working with Reggie. You know, we've known each other being in the education, you know, field for a very long time, but you know, my regular pianist, Leandro Lopez Varade has another commitment. So, you know, it's a great time to hang out with Reggie.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit about the venue, too. I mean, the Hyde Park Union Church, they do performances there throughout the year. And I know that the Hyde Park Jazz Festival is always there. But what is it about playing in that space. I mean, that's a little bit different than playing at like the Green Mill or something, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, the funny thing is that it's kind of like, you know, probably the closest sound to heaven itself because of the, you know, you play one, especially trumpet, you play one note and it's going to ring forever, mm-hmm. you know. But at the same time, the stage is so close to the audience, or I'll say the congregation, you know, so it doesn't have this feeling of a massive cathedral, you know, it's relatively close, but it's same. It has this enormous grandeur about it.
You know, that's the one thing too, and that's something that I think everybody is going to really enjoy. So it's Saturday, September 28th, 2:30 to 3:30 p.m. Hyde Park Union Church. Of course, all the information is hydeparkjazzfestival.org. But you know, that's one of those things, and I'm always curious when I'm talking to somebody, especially a horn player, and they're playing in somewhere like this, where it's, you know, you've been, especially with the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic, you've been playing, you know, Symphony Center, Ravinia, you've been doing things at you know, Prixton Pavilion, and all throughout the entire world basically, but I mean, those are huge venues, so it's got to kind of get your juices going when you get to get into a situation where you can hear every nuance and the audience is able to hear every nuance of the music. I mean, that it's something that you don't get a lot anymore, and it's very intimate. And is that something that you have to kind of change the way you're thinking, because now you're like, oh wait a minute, man, this is like, you know, I'm able to really hear what's going on.
Oh, most definitely. And then also just because of the fact that the notes last a long time, and you know, there's a lot of reverberance and whatnot, it's I think it affects the way we play. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I never felt like it holds us back either. You know, we don't have to, you know, play everything liquid or be afraid that you know, the sound's gonna bounce around too much, you know. But I as a trumpet player, I love playing in large rooms. I like to get the full extent of the sound of my trumpet.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic, because sure. before we started recording here, we were talking a little bit about the new DVD recording that is out, Chicago River, right?
Yeah. It's a CD DVD combination, but you know, when we think of DVD, we think of concert, but it's not that at all. It's actually a cinemagraph. The piece Chicago River is based on an incredible book written by Rich Cahan and Michael Williams called The Lost Panoramas. And there's just hundreds of glass plate negative images that were taken late 1800s, early 1900s. And it's centered around the theme of the reversal of the Chicago River. And so imagine having digital photography back in early 1900s. Man. And it's the pictures are absolutely amazing. So in 2013, I was commissioned by Symphony Center to compose the piece. It's a 5-movement suite. So we performed it, and you know, it just took a while to kind of get it done, you know, to get the recording done. But we decided, Rich and Michael gave us about 3,000 more images that weren't even in the book. So we were able to connect these incredible images to the 5 movements. And, you know, it tells a story. It tells the story of why the river had to be reversed. It tells the story of the actual reversal of the river. And then the 4th movement is a special piece that kind of shows my connection with water. I grew up on the banks of the Kankakee River, mm-hmm. you know, from 6 years old all the way through high school. And I, again, like, you know, I talked about being able to play in large spaces. I practiced on that river hour after hour after hour. And there's something about just the sound of the trumpet, just, you know, playing over water. So yeah. And then there's the last movement is kind of a tribute to the modernization of Chicago. After the river was reversed, Chicago grew faster than any city in the world. And, you know, it's all because now people weren't dying from cholera and all these diseases that were, you know, the human waste and all of pollution was going back into the drinking water. So that's basically why the river was reversed. So the fifth movement features Steve Eisen just blowing up a storm, man, mm-hmm. saxophone Steve Eisen. And yeah, so we're pretty proud of it, and so the DVD is it's a different experience that we encourage everyone who gets it to check out both, you know, sit and listen, but then also sit and watch.
So it's really interesting because I remember talking to you one time back, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and we were talking I think it was the concert that you were going to do at Symphony Center at that point, the Chicago River, and you mentioned something, and then you just brought it up again. You grew up on the Kankakee River and stuff, but there's something about being around water. We were talking about how it enhances your creativity or it opens up your mind or something just in general.
Oh, most definitely.
You know, talk a little bit about that because I thought it was fascinating. And now you just tied it in with this whole commission piece as well. I think it's pretty interesting how it all comes around.
Well, as I said, I was, you know, my formative years from basically when I started playing the trumpet all the way through high school, you know, the interesting thing about a river, you know, it's where you are is a moment in time, but the river never stops. You know, it's not a lake. So there's movement coming from somewhere. There's the present and then there's the future. So I would look to the east and just think about the past, you know, what brought me to the place, you know, and then I would look at the present while the water's still moving. It's a moment in time. But then, you know, even back then, I knew that I wanted to be a professional trumpet player, and I would just play to the future and think to the future and create melodies like, what will my future become? Wow, and, you know, another theme that I also use in this is the fact that we think we see the water at the surface, but we really don't know what's going on underneath. And that's kind of way our lives are, in a sense. You know, we can see folks and have a basic conversation, but we never know what's going on. But it's only as we look deeper into any situation that we can really understand and know what that situation is. So the water has maybe thousands of connections for me. So this was just an absolute joy to write.
I'm always curious too, when I'm talking to a composer like yourself, when you're writing something like this, I mean, this seems like a massive undertaking, especially when you start looking at the photography and everything tied in with all of this stuff. I mean, how do you even start? I mean, you know, I mean, it's always interesting to me because you write so much stuff and you arrange so much stuff. Yes. I mean, but there's got to be a starting point, and especially when you're working on a specific theme, I think it's almost more difficult if you're working on a specific theme sometimes because you have to stick to that theme. So now you have to start a certain way, right? I mean,
yeah, but it's all about connections. For me, I actually spend more time writing education curriculum than writing music. Oh my goodness! Yeah, with our education program, I developed a curriculum. Mark Ingram and I started a program years ago, but it's basically we teach reading and math through concepts of music. So I think that by, you know, 15, 20 years of doing that, I use the same process for writing music. It's all about words, connecting words, connecting human emotion, and connecting visual images. And I have to say, honestly, when I sit to compose, the music writes itself because, you know, I'll fill a whole notebook up with words and feelings and imagery, and then by the time I'm actually writing it's like a movie, you know. That's why, again, like, this project is pretty cool because we sort of did it's almost like a sandwich process. You know, I was inspired by the images of the book, wrote the music, and then we put images back to the music, and most of which are the ones that inspired me, but there are others too that just complete the process.
Mm-hmm. That's really, I mean, you know, conceptually we could talk about this for a very long time, so I'm not going down that road right now, but I mean, it's so interesting to me. And, you know, and kind of tying this whole thing into the performance you have coming up on Saturday, September 28th, but also talking about this, how difficult, and this is another reason, you know, another reason I love talking to composers / players is, you know, you write this and you write pieces and you write the Chicago River, you do all these different compositional things, but then you also have to play over stuff, and I'm sure you're going to be playing over some things that you wrote September 28th with the band and stuff too. How difficult is it as a composer? Do you have to pull yourself out and look at it completely separately as a player now, an improviser over that, rather than
not at all?
No, you don't. No, it doesn't.
Not at all. No. Writing for the orchestra is a, you know, painstaking, long form process. You know, it's about colors, it's about sound, it's about personalities of the orchestra. It's those connections that I talked about. But it's the same creative process, but spontaneous when I improvise. So for instance, we're going to play possibly only 4 or 5 songs on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I'm not even thinking about it. I did my Willie transcriptions. I picked the pieces. It's going to be totally improvised. I mean, once we get past the, you know, the structure of the melody and the head, as we say in jazz, you know, it's I rely on my incredible cohorts to create the symphony the jazz symphony as we play. Because if I use the same process, it would, you know, I'd be leaning more on the classical side, thinking in terms of, you know, what am I going to say? What am I going to play? You know, I even do that too in speaking. I want it to come out sort of like a Baptist preacher, you know, you have your theme and then it's like, hey, let's go. I got something to say and I'm going to play it, but I'm not going to worry about it. You know, hopefully it's going to be good. I may stumble, I may fall, but you know, I'm going to be real and honest.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that, I guess, you know, the way you say all that stuff, that's jazz, right? That's music, basically. That's
exactly. That's exactly what jazz is. And if we look historically, it comes from that experience within the African-American community where, you know, no days were promised. You know, you look at African-American slaves. It's like, man, we didn't even know our existence would even last an hour or nothing was promised. You know, our very family could be taken away just because we were basically human tools, you know, but yet I say we because I'm of the heritage, but you know, we as Americans, we take the bad and make it good. And that's the seed in which jazz was born.
Yeah. Well, so Orbert Davis Sextet in the Spirit, Saturday, September 28th, 2:30 to 3:30 p.m., Hyde Park Union Church. That's going to be an incredible concert. And then, of course, should we send everybody over to orbertdavis.com for the river so they can pick up a copy? Or is it on Amazon and everywhere? Or?
Yeah, it's not on Amazon yet, but it's chicagojazzphilharmonic.org.
Got it, chicagojazzphilharmonic.org. And I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about your long-running radio show that's on WDC every Friday night, 90.9 FM from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Are you actually over 400 shows now? Is that what I saw somewhere?
Yeah, we're almost at 500.
Holy cow. Oh, my God.
Man, it is so much fun. I just cannot tell you. I thought it was going to be a couple weekends, you know, when they asked me to do this, but it's so I'm learning so much. I'm in touch with so many young musicians and, you know, current projects that come out, but you know, I always feel like I'm in my college dorm. Like I was the one who guys would hang out and we just pull out the sides, you know, and just play and listen and play and just marvel at jazz. I feel like I'm doing the same thing right now with a, you know, much larger audience.
There's so much good music coming out, and I think, and you're like, you're in the trenches on this because of your educational programs too, but I mean, some of the musicians now that are coming up through the high school and early college, I mean, they're writing, they're composing, but they know the classics too. I mean, their vocabulary is so much farther along, I think, than a lot of you know, back in the past. Why do you think that is? Is it just the educational process or?
Oh yeah. And YouTube.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true.
Pandora. I mean, you know, I was talking to Joel Ross, you know, the phenomenal microphonist the other day. I interviewed him. We're going to do a show coming up, a new format for The Real Deal coming up. But, you know, we were just talking about that, and man, he's, you know, back in the day when I got word that Freddie Hubbard had a new CD or not, I'm sorry, a new album coming out.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have to like wait a couple months, run to Rose Records, get it. And then I run home, play it, dig it, and then try to find something else. Now it's an instant search. Yeah. You know, everything's right there or any particular song, you know, say I'm working on Autumn Leaves, you know, there are thousands of versions of the piece at one's disposal. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the young musicians, you know, and old are taking advantage of that, and you know, it's a great tool.
You know, I completely agree, and I always preface this too, and I think you're going to agree with me. It's something to watch on YouTube. It's something to listen, you know, and stream and do all that stuff. But there's nothing like actually going out and then seeing somebody play live because of the vibrations in the room and the whole atmosphere and everything that's happening.
Amen.
Yeah, you can't recreate that. That's for sure.
No. Hey, you know, it's funny. While we're talking, there's one other thing that I have to mention that happened last year. I Mark Ingram and I started our own jazz festival.
You did?
Yeah. You know, it's in my hometown because we're talking about the river. It's on the Kankakee River. There's a little park. The river splits in two right in the middle of the town, and there's a park called Island Park. So this past summer, we have a friend that's a farmer, owns quite a bit of land, and he's always about doing good for the community. So we were talking about what can we do for this community that's in desperate need of healing, You know, I think our political environment has separated us more than brought us together. And Moments is a very special place. I mean, I grew up there, and we thought, yeah, let's do a jazz festival, and man, it was like unbelievable. My group played. Sonos de Mexico played. We had a big band from Kankakee play, and they were just on fire. And we had kids from our program play, we're planning on doing it again next summer.
Wow,
the second annual. it's called the Jazz and Family Festival. So it's all about jazz, all about family.
Wow. Oh, that's unbelievable. I know from running festivals, as you know, it's an undertaking, but
oh man,
there's not, yeah. Well, you and I can talk off about that, when it happens, it's unbelievable, you know?
Yeah. Well, next year we'll ride out there together. I want you to check it out and come hang out with us.
Oh, definitely. No, I definitely want to check it out. And of course, everybody can get more information at chicagojazzphilharmonic.org or bradavis.com and hydeparkjazzfestival.org for this weekend, Saturday, September 28th, 2:30 to 3:30 p.m. at the Hyde Park Union Church. And Orbert, thanks for jumping on for a few minutes. I'm so glad we got to reconnect here. And we'll have to reconnect once things calm down a little bit and do a feature interview again.
Let's do that.
Come down and we'll talk for hours.
Let's do that, Mike. I promise. Let's do it.
That's it. All right. Sounds great. All right. And everybody can hear more interviews and podcasts at chicagojazz.com, Chicago Jazz Magazine. And until next time, hopefully I will see you somewhere out on the scene.